Congress is trying to protect your vote, and they have already passed funding bills that might cover a lot more than you may want them to. All this and more in today's episode. I'm Joel Whitmire, and this is the Freeman's Podcast. All right, so like we've started doing, we're going to look at three things about two different bills today that are currently making their way through Congress. One of them has already passed, but we still need to look at it because it passed recently and just it's something that's going to pass every year because it's one of their funding bills. But the first one that we're going to look at that is actually very important, and I would say it is of the utmost importance that this type of thing would pass. It is H.R. 22. It's already passed the House. It's in the Senate, and the Senate is they're just being iffy on whether they're going to pass it or not. So you might need to get on your phone and call your senator and get them to start working on it. And this is what it is. This is the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or the SAVE Act. Now, this is put forward by Representative Chip Rogers. I believe he's from the state of Texas. This bill requires individuals to provide documentary proof of U.S. citizenship when registering to vote in a federal election. Okay, so you have to have ID to prove your citizenship to register for a federal election. Specifically, the bill prohibits states from accepting and processing an application to register to vote in a federal election unless the applicant presents documentary proof of U.S. citizenship. The bill specifies what documents are considered acceptable proof of U.S. citizenship, such as identification that complies with the Real ID Act of 2005 that indicates U.S. citizenship. So we already have a law, the Real ID Act of 2005 already tells us what methods of identification would work in this bill to prove that you're a citizen so you can vote in a federal election. Further, the bill 1 prohibits states from registering an individual to vote in a federal election unless at the time of the individual applies to register to vote, the individual provides documentary proof of U.S. citizenship, and 2 requires states to establish an alternative process under which an applicant may submit other evidence to demonstrate U.S. citizenship. Okay, so basically what that's saying is that this law, the federal government is going to prohibit states from registering an individual to vote in a federal election unless that individual applies to register to vote. When they apply to register to vote, the individual provides documentary proof of U.S. citizenship. Okay, so if they can't do that, then this bill, this law, if it becomes law, would prevent states from accepting an application for somebody who can't prove that they're a citizen. And it would also, too, again, the second part of that was it requires states to establish an alternative process under which an applicant may submit other evidence to demonstrate U.S. citizenship. Man, it is really hard to say citizenship after saying U.S. I challenge you to say that 10 times fast. Each state must take affirmative steps on an ongoing basis to ensure that only U.S. citizens are registered to vote, which shall include establishing a program to identify individuals who are not U.S. citizens using information supplied by certain sources. Additionally, states must remove non-citizens from their official list of eligible voters, and I think that's fantastic. States would then, if they have people who are not eligible, they aren't citizens on their rolls, they have to be removed. The bill allows for a private right of action against an election official who registers an applicant to vote in a federal election who fails to present documentary proof of U.S. citizenship. The bill establishes criminal penalties for certain offenses, including registering an applicant to vote in a federal election who fails to present documentary proof of U.S. citizenship. All right, so that's setting up penalties for states, for people in states who are knowingly accept an applicant that doesn't have the right documentation to show that they are U.S. citizens. Again, the other thing was that the bill allows for a private right of action against an election official who registers an applicant to vote in a federal election who fails to present documentary proof of U.S. citizenship, meaning that these people, if they do allow somebody to register to vote without the right documentation, they can be brought up on charges. So, how does this bill match up with the Constitution? Now, this is something that's pretty cool. The House of Representatives has a rule that every bill that comes forward has to show what constitutional authority, where in the Constitution gives them authority to pass this bill. Now, Chip Roy, he really knows his Constitution because his was huge. and his reasoning for why this bill is constitutional. And I have to say, of everything we've looked at so far in this podcast, this is probably one of the this is the few so far that I'm like, yeah, this is absolutely within their jurisdiction, and it and I agree with this policy, and it should happen. So HR 22, the SAVE Act, is that where they get their authority in the Constitution. Congress has the power to enact this legislation pursuant to the following. Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1, and it states, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, or the state government gets to decide that, but the Congress, the federal Congress, may at any time by law make or alter such regulations. So Congress has the authority to make laws and regulations that apply to how federal elections are done. Also, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. That is one of the powers listed in those 18 powers that the federal government has. We've talked about that in another episode. And Article 1, Section 8 was where Congress gets its the majority of its power that affects us, that doesn't deal with internal things, but has to do with how the rest of the country is going to act, and it applies to the rest of the country. And one of those powers is this, that Congress has the power to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, to talk about citizenship and how citizenship is going to work in our country. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, this is the necessary and proper clause, and it states, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested in this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Meaning, they can make laws that help the functions of the other powers listed in the Constitution. They can pass necessary and proper laws that help them, those other powers, actually become functional and actually do what they're supposed to do. And then Mr. Roy, Chip Roy, Representative Roy, sorry, he listed out the 15th Amendment, the 19th Amendment, and 24th Amendment, and those all deal with how U.S. citizens vote in the United States. And then the 26th Amendment, which is what gave the right of citizens of the United States who are 18 years of age or older the right to vote. So the single subject of this legislation is to require states to obtain documentary proof of U.S. citizenship to register an applicant to vote in a federal elections. And from everything listed out here, this lines up with the Constitution. It lines up with the powers listed in Article 1, Section 8, but also Article 1, Section 4 that gives Congress the power to make laws and regulations for elections. So is it constitutional? Yes, this is a constitutional law. Now, how does this affect our liberty, our rights, and from a biblical worldview, but also how does it affect you as an individual in your community? So this is great for liberty. In other episodes, we've really done deep dives on liberty, and I invite you to go find those on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, or Apple. And we do just me and a friend of mine, we really dig into what is liberty. And liberty, just as in a nutshell, liberty is not a license to do whatever you want. It's the ability and responsibility to do all that God says is right and good, and to enjoy all that God says and has given us to enjoy without interference from individuals or government. So that's liberty in a nutshell. This is great for liberty. This protects the rule of law. It protects our elections, which are a huge part of how our liberty is protected in this country. And as liberty is a gift of God, this is a great good that our elections be protected. So this bill, the SAVE Act, it follows the rule of law. It's within the bounds of the Constitution. It provides order and certainty where it was in the past and is right now. Without this law, it's open to abuse and oppression. So from a biblical worldview, again, order, liberty, it's all good. Selecting leaders is fundamental to being a free people. And if it is not being done lawfully, then there is chaos. This bill, the SAVE Act, seeks to minimize the chaos caused by those who weren't following the laws that were already on the books that only U.S. citizens should vote in federal elections, period. And I think they should, only U.S. citizens should vote in state elections too, but that's for the states to decide. So, SAVE Act, great. It's constitutional. It lines up with a biblical worldview. We looked at the details of it. This is a great, great bill. It needs to pass. I would invite you, get on the phone, get in touch with your senators, be respectful, be kind, but call on them to get this bill passed. Now, the second bill that we're going to look at, this has actually already became a law. So it was H.R. 7148, and it's an appropriations bill. So, and more than just for one thing, it's a Consolidated Appropriations Act. This bill provides for fiscal year 2026 appropriations to several federal departments and agencies. And all that means is that this bill is telling how these departments and agencies are going to be funded and how much they're going to be funded. It also extends various expiring programs and authorities, which is super vague and that frustrates the daylights out of me. Specifically, the bill includes three of the 12 regular fiscal year 2026 appropriation bills or funding bills. So there's 12. This is three of them. The Department of Defense Appropriations Act of 2026 is included in this consolidated bill. The Department of Labor, Health and Human Services, and Education and related agencies and appropriations. And the third one is the Transportation, Housing, and Urban Development and Related Agencies and Appropriations Act. So all three of those different appropriations bills are all together in this one. Now, the departments and agencies funded in the bill include the Department of Defense, the Department of Labor. Now, I wanted to know what each of these departments were for. The Department of Defense is the only one in this whole list that was an original department set up by the Constitution under the executive of George Washington, under his authority. It was called the Department of War now. It was the Department of Defense, but it's also now called the Department of War under our current president. So that one is what it sounds like. It's there for war to facilitate the function of our military to win our wars and protect our people for defense. So the Department of Labor. Now, this one, this purpose of the Department of Labor is to foster, promote, and develop the welfare of the wage earners, job seekers, and retirees of the United States, improve working conditions, advance opportunities for profitable employment, and assure work-related benefits and rights. So that's one of the departments that's being funded. The next department that's being funded in this Consolidated Appropriations Act is the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, the mission of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is to enhance the health and well-being of all Americans by providing for effective health and human services and by fostering sound, sustained advances in the science underlying medicine, public health, and social services. So the Department of Education is the next one. This one's mission is to promote student achievement and preparation for global competitiveness by fostering educational excellence and ensuring equal access. Congress established the U.S. Department of Education on May 4th, 1980. And the only reason I'm getting into that when they established it in this one is because it was listed on their mission statement. But it was May 4th, 1980. Congress made a law, created the Department of Education. In the Department of Education Act, Education Organization Act is the bill that created this. Under this law, the Department of Education's mission is to strengthen the federal commitment to assuring access to equal education opportunity for every individual, supplement and complement the efforts of states, the local school systems, and other instrumentalities of the states, the private sector, public and private nonprofit educational research institutions, community-based organizations, parents, and students to improve the quality of education, and on it's going to go. So you get the picture. There's a lot the Department of Education is supposed to do. The Department of Transportation. Now, this one, the mission of the U.S. DOT, or the Department of Education, is to ensure our nation has the safest, most efficient, and modern transportation system in the world that improves the quality of life for all American people and communities, from rural to urban, and increases the productivity and competitiveness of American workers and businesses. All right, and then the Department of Housing and Urban Development is the last one that's included in this appropriations bill. Now, this mission and vision for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the mission is to create strong, sustainable, inclusive communities and quality, affordable homes for all. The Department of Housing and Urban Development is working to strengthen the housing market to bolster the economy and protect consumers, meet the need for quality, affordable rental homes, utilize housing as a platform for improving quality of life, and build inclusive and sustainable communities free from discrimination, and then several other related agencies. What? Like, if you go read Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, if you go read the entire U.S. Constitution, you will not find any mention for anything for the Department of Housing and Urban Development or for the Department of Transportation. Though, I would say you can maybe argue that one from the Commerce Clause, even a correct understanding of the Commerce Clause of they have the power to regulate commerce, buying and selling, but among the states, not in the states, individual states, but among the states, and transportation might could do that. Maybe you could argue that. But going on, the Department of Education isn't mentioned in the Constitution or anything to do with promoting education like that. The Department of Health and Human Services is not. And the Department of Labor is also not, though I'm sure they'll try to say that the Commerce Clause allows them to do that. I completely disagree because there are a lot of internal things about labor that the federal government doesn't have the power to regulate. And what's more is that these regulatory agencies, these departments that are not constitutional, they have the power to make rules and regulations without our consent that have the force of law, that can bind us, that can fine us, that can imprison us, and it's all being done without our consent. I'm gonna talk about this and probably talk about this till I'm blue, or they just, you know, the podcast just gets shut down or something. I don't know. Administrative agencies are not constitutional and they violate the rule of law because they're not based in our consent, which is what the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence says is the foundation for our laws. So these government agencies are making laws that are arbitrary. That means they're not based in justice. They're not based in law. They have nothing backing them except the experts' expertise. Are we serious? Like, if we the people want our government to regulate education or housing and urban development or transportation or any of these things, fine, pass a constitutional amendment. But until then, there is nothing in the Constitution. Therefore, they are unjust, unconstitutional, unlawful agencies. And they got to go because they are causing a lot of havoc and chaos in our lives. Now, not going to get into I'll touch on a little bit more that the bill gets into. It extends to several expiring programs and authorities, meaning it's these expiring programs and authorities, the bill extends them. It says, okay, we're going to keep doing these things. One is the U.S. Grain Standards Act. Again, where in the Constitution does the government have the power to regulate grain? The Commodity Futures Trading Commission's Whistleblower Program. The National Flood Insurance Program. Where is that in the Constitution? The authority for the Forest Service to use the Agriculture Conservation Experience Service Program. Oh my goodness, are they wordy? The Transportation Security Administration Reimbursable Screening Services Program, the Motor Carrier Safety Advisory Committee, several authorities and programs related to cybersecurity. We won't even get into them. That's just what's listed, is just several authorities and programs related to cybersecurity. And if you go read the entire bill, they are listed out in details. This is just a summary I've got right now. Going to skip some. The U.S. Parole Commission, the authority for the U.S. Sentencing Commission to promulgate certain guidelines or amendments related to the use of unmanned aircraft, certain bankruptcy fees. Now, maybe that's constitutional because the Constitution does give laws to set up like how to deal with bankruptcies. So maybe that actually might be constitutional. Hey, we found one. Trade preferences for Haiti and eligible countries in sub-Saharan Africa and several healthcare authorities and programs. So, I've already spoiled it, but a second thing we always look at. So we look at what a bill is. The second thing is, how does it match up to the Constitution, the founder's intention? Well, again, Article 1, Section 8, list out the 18 powers that the federal government is allowed to do. It's like the founding fathers gave the federal government 18 things, like, hey, you can pass laws on these things. nothing else. Okay? Now, this is how Congress has argued it has the power to make the law. So, because remember, I think we touched on it just a minute ago, the House of Representatives has to list out its constitutional authority. This is how H.R. 7148, this appropriations bill, this is how they say they have the authority to do this. They say Congress has the power to enact this legislation pursuant to the following. The principal constitutional authority for this legislation is Clause 7 of Section 9 of Article 1, or Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7. Of the Constitution of the United States. This is the appropriation power, which states no money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequences of appropriations made by law. And that's true. In addition, Clause 1 of Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution, or as the way I like to say it, is Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, the spending power provides the Congress shall have the power to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. All right. I'm going to touch on that in just a moment. Together, these specific constitutional provisions establish the congressional power of the purse, granting Congress the authority to appropriate funds to determine their purpose, amount, and period of availability, and to set forth terms and conditions governing their use. All right. Congress does have the spending power. And yes, the Constitution does say Congress has the power to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. That is absolutely true. What is not true is that Congress has the power to determine the purpose of, or to determine what the general welfare is. The general welfare is defined by the intentions of our founders in establishing the Constitution. What they wrote it to be is that the general welfare is only contained in the remaining 17 powers of Article 1, Section 8, and any other power mentioned in the Constitution. That is it. That is all the general welfare means. And so for Congress to say we have the power to determine the purpose of funds for the general welfare and we get to define what the general welfare is, that means there's no limitation on Congress. They can literally fund or defund anything. That is not constitutional. That is not the idea of limited government, which we'll get into in a few minutes here. No, the Constitution gets to determine the purpose of the funds, not Congress. Again, Congress only gets to determine the use of these funds in so much as those purposes of the funds abide by the remaining 17 powers listed in Article 1, Section 8. And just to reiterate that. So the spending power for the common defense and general welfare, yes. And that's when they are funding the Department of Defense, yes, they have the power to spend for the common defense. That's great. That's constitutional. So that one, we can check that one. General welfare, again, it is limited. It is only within the limits and as defined by the rest of the 17 powers in Article 1, Section 8. It is not whatever Congress gets to determine the general welfare is. So the funding for all those other administrative agencies that don't have anything to do with any of the powers listed in the Constitution, it's unconstitutional to fund them. It's unconstitutional that they exist. Congress does not have the power to let an administrative agency set guidelines that end up having the force of law. And they especially don't have the power to fund those agencies. Most of these agencies that are funded by this bill regulate things and functions well beyond the limits of Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. And so other than, again, the Department of Defense, and maybe you can say the Department of Transportation because it kind of deals with things that go across state lines among the states. Other than that, none of the rest of this is constitutional. So the third thing that we look at, we've looked at what the bill is. We've looked at, is it constitutional? The third thing is how it affects liberty and rights under God, how it, from a biblical worldview, we're going to look at how it affects your liberty and rights and how it affects you as an individual and your community. So providing for the common defense is an essential duty of our federal government and any government, and it has the power to do that from the Constitution. And I would say more than that, from a biblical worldview, Romans 13 says that God has instituted government to be his servant for our good, to punish evil and reward good, and part of that is defending the people. So providing for the defense, that lines up with a biblical worldview. providing for things like the Department of Labor, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Education, the Department of Transportation, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. These are not essential duties of our federal government or any, well, I can't say any government, because you could break down in the states, maybe, if the states, the people want that in the states, but it is, these are not essential duties. They are not constitutional duties of our federal government. And Congress does not have the power to A, make agencies that can make rules and regulations that have the force of law without our consent. And B, it does not have the power to keep funding these agencies that are not constitutional to begin with. If we continue to allow the federal government to function outside of its constitutional boundaries, all in the name of, well, it's just the way it's always been done. Like, it's been this way for years. If we keep doing this, how are we free? How do we actually have true freedom? The freedom that God gave us as individuals. The freedom that was meant to be protected by our federal and state governments. How are we free if we keep letting our governments operate outside the boundaries that are set in law? The principle of the rule of law is found all throughout Scripture. And Deuteronomy 17:14-20 is where God sets up the law for the king. And we can take the principle from that to apply to government, that the king had to abide by the law. Well, our government needs to abide by the law. That is a biblical worldview. That is a biblical principle. This principle of the rule of law, again, is found all throughout Scripture, and Christians should be of the first people to stand up for the rule of law. Because the rule of law protects our God-given rights and liberty, we should demand that the rule of law, out of love for our neighbors, we should demand that the rule of law be maintained, so that the rights and liberty of our families and our neighbors aren't violated. They're actually protected. That's what happens when we have the rule of law. But when we let Congress and the federal government function outside those boundaries, again, it destroys these things. When society functions by rules, by laws that we have all consented to, and more than that, that are based in biblical principles, people can be free and they can flourish, and that is a good thing. And I believe that is what God wants. And that's why God instituted government in the first place. So we as a people should work to get our governments back within the boundaries of our laws. And again, if we need or feel like we need the government to do any of these, you know, any of these functions, transportation, housing, urban development, health and human services, fine, we can have that debate and pass a constitutional amendment. But without that, it's got to stop. It's got to stop, guys. All right, so that's all we're going to cover in today's episode. Remember, we covered the SAVE Act. It's so important that passes. Without our elections being protected, that people have to be citizens to vote, there's only chaos. It's only going to cause trouble, and that starts violating our liberty really fast, because our elections, which are vital to a free people, aren't secure. And the other thing is this appropriations bill. And again, this is only 3 of the 12 that pass every year. Only one of the things is really constitutional. Maybe you can argue something for transportation, but other than that, it's not constitutional. And we need to put a stop. We need our representatives to put a stop to this unconstitutional, lawless acts. So that's all we got today. I hope you guys found that this was helpful. If it was, please like, subscribe, share with a friend, hit that bell so you can get notifications. And yeah, we appreciate it. God bless y'all.